Long has the story of the prodigal been my favorite story in all the Bible. In fact, I would suggest that perhaps it's the greatest story that Jesus ever told. For years and years I've known about this story, but only recently have I come to discover in even greater depths the power that's in that story. Lord willing, for the next few weeks, we're going to be looking at this story. And you know, if you know anything about the story at all, the real hero, the story is about the father. But there's a younger brother, and there's an older brother, and there's a father. And there's a younger brother in all of us. And there's an older brother in all of us. And hopefully as we grow, a great deal of the Father will be in us. I mentioned last week as I began this series that Jesus told three stories. He told a story about a lost sheep. He told a story about a lost coin. And then he climaxed it with telling a story really about two lost boys. And what prompted that sequence of stories was that Jesus was associating with tax collectors and the worst kinds of sinners. And the scribes and the Pharisees and the religious crowd were so put off by it that they accused Jesus of associating with those kind of people. And we pointed out the fact that their criticism was the highest tribute, ironically, that could be given to Jesus. And so we considered the story of the lost sheep and how the shepherd could not rest until that one was brought back. Or the one lost coin out of 10 that the woman searched for diligently. And in both of those stories, there's rejoicing when the one that's lost is found. And in the story of the prodigals, there will also be rejoicing. But this story is too deep. It has too many profound lessons for you and me today than to just go right through it. In fact, today we focus only on two verses in Jesus' story. He'd finished the story of the sheep. He'd finished the story of the lost coin. And then in verse 11, which is our text today, Luke 15, verse 11, 12, and 13, and he said, a certain man had two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me. So he divided to them his livelihood. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, journeyed to a far country. And I'm going to stop right there. We'll pick up the rest of that verse next time. What we see in this beginning right here in these two verses, before the prodigal son can return, there is of necessity a leaving. And implicit in that leaving is such powerful truth for us that we dare not rush to the conclusion and miss all that's involved in the leaving. Because in the leaving, there was a radical rejection. In the leaving, there was a deaf ear to the voice of love. And in the leaving, there was a search for love and life where it could never be found. A certain man had two sons. The younger of them said to him, Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me. So he divided to them his livelihood. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and journeyed to a far country. You see, when we read this story, we want so desperately to leap to the conclusion and relish in the immense joy of that boy returning. But you see, the immense joy that we celebrate with the father and with the servants loses the immense sorrow in his leaving. All of us, to some degree, may be familiar with the sorrow in someone leaving and going, and the heartache that is left by the emptiness, especially as in this case when it involves them not just leaving geographically, but leaving spiritually a home that is really theirs, but they don't seem to know it. So please do not overlook the immense sorrow that is in this story. And I would want you to know what his request suggests. When we hear it, we don't hear it in the depths of that Middle Eastern culture. Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me. And the father did it. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and journeyed to a far country. You see, we lose sight of the fact that in that Eastern culture, his request suggests far more than we can comprehend. I read an article by a gentleman who has studied the Middle Eastern culture from its days of biblical setting even to the present days. And he said he had traveled throughout many Middle Eastern countries and had asked in the villages, has anyone in this village ever done what this young man did? And they said, no. Well, why? Because if he did, his father would beat him. Why? Because what that meant was that I'm rejecting everything that you are, everything that you have. I want it. Give me the inheritance. And it almost literally implied, I wish you were dead already. I can't wait for you to die. Now, when we see the depth of what that meant, it only accentuates for us more fully the depth of the Father's love in this story. Because you see, the prodigal in us, not quite as deliberate as the story of this young man, the prodigal in us, when we reject the love that's at home, and I'm talking about our spiritual home, when we reject the love that is ours inherently because we're born into the love of God, and all of a sudden we begin to think, I don't have a home, I don't belong, I don't want God, I want what I want, we are saying in essence, I kind of wish God was dead. Why do you think that theologically the God is dead movement even exists? It's not because men can prove there is no God. It's because men have rejected the love of God and wish there was no God. And here's the prodigal. This is more immensely painful than we can imagine. What his request suggests in that culture is far more offensive than it sounds on first reading. And he went to a distant country. Now, when it says he went to a distant country, you see, it's far more than just a young lad wanting to see more of the world. I think we've diminished the impact of the story by often saying that's what it was. Here was a boy who said life on the farm is a little too dull. I want to go see the big city lights. That's only superficial to to the deeper problem. This was a spiritual rejection of all that home represents. This is one who is rejecting all that home affords, given to us graciously by God. And so we go into that distant country, which leads us then beyond the radical rejection that's implied in his request to his deaf ears to the voice of love. We know from this story and from all that we know about God and about Jesus that boy was loved in his home. There was love to abound in that home. Why didn't he know it? Why would you and I, in our prodigal sense, oftentimes not hear the voice of love coming from the Father? Why? You see, in his leaving home, and in our leaving home spiritually, it is living as though I have no home, and I must look far and wide to find one. And so he's there in the distant country. And as the Bible said in that verse, which we'll kind of pick up next week, but we have to see it today, there he wasted his life in prodigal living. By the way, the definition of prodigal is extravagant and wasteful. So in extravagant and wasteful living, he was losing his life trying to find it there in that distant country. Do you realize the implication as to why Jesus, the teller of this story, in one of his more teaching moments would say, he who seeks to find his life will lose it, but he who loses his life for my sake will find it? It's when we're out there in that distant country trying to find our life that we lose it. Because we're out there in a world filled with boisterous voices. The world is filled with boisterous, loud, compelling voices. We're out there searching sometimes to find our life, and we're not hearing that still, small voice. How can that voice be heard? And why is it not heard? Why is it that some have heard and responded to the voice that says, you are loved, you're my son, you're my daughter, you have a home? Why do some hear it and others don't? Well, you see, that voice can only be heard when we allow ourselves to be touched. I've talked to many of you and know a little about your life's journey. Some of your testimonies could be beautiful in the sense that running here and there, far and wide, you were hearing all kinds of voices. But there came a moment, there came a time in a stillness that you heard something that God had been saying all along, but you could never hear it. But somehow, in the stillness, you allowed yourself to be touched and to hear that voice. Because you see, it's that still, small voice. And when we're running, we can't hear. When we're inundated with the boisterous voices of the world, that still, small voice gets drowned out. You know, the truth of this story, the power in this parable, connects so beautifully with all the stories of the Bible, revealing to us how life really is, who we really are, who God really is, and what God is trying to do with his people. And even in the Old Testament, one of his most famous servants, one who was allowed to not even face death, but was taken to heaven in the fiery chariot in the whirlwind, Elijah. You remember Elijah? He had a great and great encounter with the power of God on Mount Carmel, where he was the hero of the faith. And God demonstrated himself powerfully with fire coming down from heaven and consuming the altar and burning up all the offering, and Elijah destroying all those false prophets of Baal. And it was just days after that that Jezebel put the fear in Elijah's heart. And she said, I'm sending a messenger to tell Elijah, if he isn't as dead as all of my prophets by tomorrow, my name is not Jezebel. And that message got to Elijah, and what did he start doing? He ran. Listen, folks, you've heard my testimony about 2 full years of running from God. This young man in the prodigal story, he's running from home. Anytime you're running away from God and being inundated with these voices of the world, you cannot hear what you need to hear. And so Elijah is running, and he's hiding. And then he winds up in this cave, and God's determined to get his attention. And Elijah has not forgotten that there is a God. He's just running from his relationship with God, which always begs the question as we look at each other this morning around this room. I doubt there's anyone in here who's forgotten God. But have you forgotten your relationship with him? Even as his child, as this prodigal was his child, are you running? And Elijah was running. But he came to the mouth of the cave. And there was a horrific hurricane blowing through the mountains. And the Bible says God was not in the hurricane. And as Elijah stood there at the mouth of the cave, there was an earthquake that rattled the mountain. And the Bible said God was not in the earthquake. And then as fire and lightning danced on the hills and ricocheted off the rocks and the thunder roared, God was not in the fire. But then, as Elijah stood at the mouth of the cave, there must have been a zephyr, a smooth, sweet, gentle breeze. The Bible calls it a sweet, delicate voice. A sweet, delicate voice. And God spoke to Elijah. The noise and the clamor had died down. And now Elijah was in a position to hear from God. I can't help but emphasize something about that, because you see, when you're running, you're not thinking straight. When you're running, you're not thinking straight. And later in our story, this boy who's gone to the distant country, the Bible says, when he came to his senses, it was then that he heard that still, small voice. But that's for another Sunday down the road. Elijah wasn't thinking straight. He was feeling sorry for himself. He kind of pouted and said, I'm the only one in Israel that serves you. My life's in danger. I don't have any work to do anymore. And when he paused and heard that still, small voice, God said, there's work for you to do, Elijah. I want you to appoint Ben-Hadad as king. I want you to appoint Jehu as a warrior. I want you to go get Elisha and anoint him to be a prophet. Oh, and by the way, Elijah, you're not the only one serving me. I have 7,000 servants that you don't even know about. You see, when we're running from God, we think we know so much and we know so little. We're listening to so many voices that we can't hear the voice of God. And it's only when we allow ourselves to be touched that that deaf ear becomes open to the voice of God. So too often we're out there listening to the loud and seductive voices of the world. those voices that say, well, you'll be loved if. Now, stop and think when you hear that. What did you have at home? No ifs. You had unconditional love. But you begin to listen to those voices. You'll be loved if you perform well enough. You'll be loved if you're successful. You'll be loved if you can make all the right connections. You'll be loved if you avoid certain kinds of people. On and on, the loud, boisterous voices of the world shout at us and drown out the sweet, gentle voice of the Lord. And so in the leaving, this young boy made a radical rejection and he turned a deaf ear to the voice of love. And in conclusion, he was searching for something where it cannot be found. You know, there's a little theology in country music. Some of it's good, some of it's bad. There's a song, there's one, more proficient in country music than I would know the whole song, but too long I've been looking for love in all the wrong places, seeking love in all the wrong faces. Describes a lot of folks. Looking for love in all the wrong places. Looking for happiness, success, in all the wrong faces. Because you see, when we're searching for what has been given to us by God, when we're out searching for it where it cannot be found, we're fighting an unending losing battle. And you see, for you and me, as long as... And I'm going to use the personal pronoun here because I want each of us to put ourselves in the place of that prodigal son. Because as I said, in each aspect of this story, there's a little of the younger son in us. There's a little of the older son in us as well. As long as I'm unaware of God's love, as long as I am unaware of God's love, I give myself to the power of the voices of the world and put myself in bondage to its demands. Pardon? As long as I am unaware of God's love, I give myself to the power of the voices of the world and put myself in bondage to its demands. More than once, I have addressed this congregation by saying, you can never live life the way you were created to live it until beyond any shadow of a doubt, it is settled in your heart and your mind that you are loved by God. Until that issue is settled beyond any doubt, you really will be looking for love in all the wrong places and in too many different faces. Whether it's the place of success, beauty, fame, fortune, athletic achievement, financial power, sexual gratification, all the things that are called addictions, which our culture is permeated by addiction. Why? Because we have a culture that has never, ever fully been convinced that we are the creation of God and that we are loved by God, and that when we allow ourselves to be loved by God, we have a home with our God. So addiction best describes the lostness that permeates society. You, putting ourselves in that first person position, I am or I become the prodigal son every time I search for unconditional love where it cannot be found. I become a prodigal every time I search for unconditional love where it cannot be found. And the only place that it can truly be found is in the arms of the Father. In conclusion, take these words. It was love that allowed the Son to find His life even at the risk of losing it. That's God with each of us. Because, folks, I want to tell you, not all prodigals come home. Not all prodigals come home. And so love allowed the Son to find His life even at the risk of losing it. That was the love of the Father. That's why there is no hint in the text that the Father ever put up any argument and said, "Son, stay home," or "What are you doing?" or "How can you treat me this way?" He let him go. Just let him go. What I find is that I am loved so much that I am free to leave home. But the good news is, because in focusing on this portion of the parable today, I did not want to end with the focus totally on the immense sorrow of the leaving. I wanted to emphasize the immense sorrow of the leaving, that it might ring in each of our hearts and minds the inherent danger to us, the wasted years, the heartache to other people by running to that distant country. But it would be awful if I closed any message without getting to the climax of the story, the good news. And that is that the Father is always waiting for my return. His arms are outstretched to receive me back and whisper again what I once could not hear. You are loved. Welcome home. Let's stand to our feet. If we're going to sing, and I believe we are, "How Deep the Father's Love," I just ask you, let it sink in.
How deep the Father's love for us, how vast beyond all measure, that He should give His only Son to make a wretch His treasure. How great the pain of searing loss, the Father turns His face away, as wounds which mar the chosen one bring many sons to glory. Behold the man upon a cross, my sin upon His shoulders, ashamed I hear Thy mocking voice cry out among the scoffers. It was my sin that held Him there until it was accomplished. His dying breath hath brought me life. I know that it is finished. boast in anything. No gifts, no power, no wisdom, but I will boast in Jesus Christ, His death and resurrection. Why should I gain from His reward? I cannot give an answer, but this I know with all my heart, His wounds have paid my ransom. Why should I gain from His reward? I cannot give an answer, but this I know with all my heart, His wounds have paid my ransom. But this I know with all my heart, His wounds have paid my ransom.
Now may the Lord bless you and keep you. Lord, make His face shine upon you. Lord, be gracious to you. Lord, lift His countenance upon you and give you peace. You are dismissed.